Dr. Springman, and you're listening to Body Language. Do doctors cry? Oh, yes, they do. Especially when they lose a patient they couldn't save, or a patient who just would not change their destructive behavior. Those feelings and more are documented in the book, What Doctors Feel, by our next guest, physician Dr. Daniel Ofri. Doctor, welcome to Body Language on Radio MD.
Thank you so much.
Doctor, why did this book need to be written by you?
Well, I think that we have an assumption about doctors, you know, in their white coat and they're rational and we're evidence-based and we do everything by things that are backed by research. But I think when you look around, especially from the inside, you see that doctors are far less rational than we tell ourselves and certainly than we tell our patients that we are.
In fact, you say in the book, physicians are assumed to be objective, fair and balanced, rational beings, easily able to detach as they guide patients and families through some of life's most challenging moments. That's part of the premise of the book, isn't it?
Indeed. And, you know, I often say to listeners or readers, you could probably type in your symptoms into a computer, and it would probably spit out a fairly accurate diagnosis. But most of us probably wouldn't feel as though we were really taken care of, and most of us wouldn't want to be cared for, especially when we're very ill, by a computer or an iPhone. We'd much prefer a real live doctor or nurse. And because there are other parts beyond the technical diagnostic part that make us feel as though we're being cared for. And with that comes the emotional baggage, for good and for bad, that comes with a human interaction.
Daniel Ofri, MD, the physician, is the author of What Doctors Feel, How Emotions Affect the Practice of Medicine. Who is this book aimed at?
It's aimed at the general public, and that includes doctors and nurses and healthcare providers, but the general public. I think that patients, we don't know what goes on. We get into the doctor's office or the hospital. It's a very strange and foreign place. It's almost like being an immigrant in a new country. There's another language, another way of dressing, other customs, and it can be very disorienting, especially if you're sick. If you're feeling less than your usual self, we're particularly vulnerable. And then being in the...
Which is probably why you're there in the first place. Either you're feeling poorly or someone else is.
And, you know, we all have experienced, I think, the sense of losing our stature when we go to a hospital or an emergency room or a doctor's office. We feel less than we normally are. We're in that little gown. We no longer have our title, our regular job identity. And especially if we're in pain at the same time or frightened about our mortality, what will happen next. It's a very difficult place to be in, and we're in some ways so dependent upon the person who walks in the white coat.
Part of our mission, our goal on Body Language on Radio MD, is to promote health literacy by helping to train patients to be more effective patients, especially in the short period of time that they may have with a physician like you. How will your book, What Doctors Feel, Dr. Ofri, help people achieve that?
I think they'll have more of a realistic understanding of what's going on in the interaction with their doctor. Because there are
And subsequently develop more realistic expectations?
I believe so. There are many things happening at the same time. Even in a short office visit, there's information going back and forth. There's nonverbal clues going back and forth. There's power struggles going back and forth. And usually, most patients are only paying attention to the things that are being said back and forth, but they feel the other things. I think patients intuitively know when they're not being taken seriously, when the doctor's preoccupied, when the doctor's very short with them. Well, they may not be able to put their finger on what's wrong, and I want them to be able to understand that, to explicitly realize, you know, at this moment, if this doctor is not giving me their full attention, or is blowing off my complaints, or is preoccupied with something else. And I think if we can understand that, if we're strong enough, we can point that out and say, hey, you know, right now I don't get a sense of you paying attention to me. That's often very difficult, but I think to say in the moment, but if you understand that, you might, when you leave, talk to an office manager or get a different doctor or bring in a partner or friend the next time.
Absolutely.
To help that.
Absolutely.
So to identify what's going on, and for good as well, to understand, boy, this is a doctor who's really listening to me, is really getting it. This is a doctor I want to be with, to be able to understand that.
Here's a sign that should probably be on the wall of every healer's, every physician's office. Quote, may I never see in the patient anything but a fellow creature in pain. Can you explain that in terms of the empathy that I believe you feel that your colleagues should have?
It's an interesting quote. It's extremely old. It's probably more than 1,000 years old, we think, or hundreds of years. It's from the Oath of Maimonides. One of the oaths, like the Hippocratic Oath, that many medical students say upon graduation. And to me, that captures the essence of empathy, in especially in the medical profession, that no matter what we do as doctors, whether we operate, do research, take data, look at patients' hearts and lungs, you know, it's so easy to get caught up in the day-to-day minutiae of medical work. We're documenting in the computer. But we always have to remember that the pinnacle of medicine, the most important fundamental, is that you're with someone in pain or who has a need, who is sick or is ill. And that's the guiding light.
You know, I interviewed an ophthalmologist once upon a time who wept as he told me a story about a patient who had glaucoma, who would not take her drops because she found it inconvenient. And then she went blind and became a social, economic, and emotional burden on the family and also on the physician. I mean, it's very, very frustrating when people don't, when they don't cooperate, when they don't adhere, when they don't comply with reasonable requests like, if you don't want to go blind, take your drops for glaucoma.
You know, I think we have to also, as physicians, understand that people are very complex. They come from a variety of backgrounds and situations and family life. And we, you know, we often make the assumption that us saying, stop smoking, you know, is enough because that makes sense. The data support it. I had a patient just last week. She's an elderly woman with terrible vascular disease, and she smokes a pack a day for 50 years, and she isn't going to quit. And so I finally spoke to her. I harangue her every time, and we're not getting anywhere years into this. I said, you know, tell me, do you enjoy smoking? Because if you do, go ahead and smoke. You know, I'm not going to be able to stop you, so get pleasure in that. Know that it's terrible for your vessels. You'll probably have an amputation from that. But if that's what gives you pleasure in life, I can't, you know, harangue you to death. On the other hand, if you're
do you keep giving her the same old speech, doctor?
Well, I stopped. That's why I said, tell me, if this is what gives you pleasure in life, and it does, she really enjoys smoking.
Yeah.
And so I have to say that this is something that she's going to accept. We talk about, you know, the risks that go with it, but I can't harangue her. I've tried, you know, many different tactics. I have to accept that's who she is. I'm not going to throw her out of my practice. How do we, then I take the approach of what we call harm reduction. How can I help
yes,
her
absolutely.
Get the best
absolutely.
Out of her life, given that
right.
she isn't going to quit?
Right. How can she, through practicing harm reduction, stop or mitigate the deleterious effects of second or third hand smoke on other individuals? In other words, if she chooses to go this way, that's fine, but let's not take anyone else with us. I finally made my peace with my mother's smoking. She developed emphysema and after that was diagnosed, they did some imaging and lo and behold, she had lung cancer too. She said, you know, honey, everybody's gone in my life. Smoking is my only friend. I said, well, I hope the two of you are very happy. And that was my moment of acceptance. Speaking of acceptance, our guest today is Danielle Ofri, MD, the physician author of What Doctors Feel, How Emotions Affect the Practice of Medicine. Dr. Ofri, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio MD. I'm Christopher Springman, and for all of you, be well.